was considerably more to Woodstock than what's in the movie. The movie kind of writes a mythological version of Woodstock. And, you know, it's based on Woodstock, but it isn't all of Woodstock. And what I've been engaged in for the last 14 years or thereabouts is trying to reconstruct all of the audio and the music from Woodstock. It's about 36 hours of material, and it tells a somewhat different story than the story that you get in the film. There's a ton of things that there simply either there wasn't room, or they were making editorial choices, or they didn't have film footage, all manner of reasons why things didn't make it into the movie. This is the full version of Woodstock.
And because of that, some pretty amazing bands were essentially written out of history, right?
Sure. I mean, well, the one that I'm thinking about a lot right now, just because the performance is so incredible and so little of it has really been heard before, the Creedence Clearwater Revival set, which is an exceptional piece of work by a band at the peak of their powers. John Fogerty wasn't thrilled with the performance for whatever mysterious reason. It's hard to imagine once you've heard this performance that anybody could be dissatisfied with it, but he was, and so it was largely unheard for decades. There's plenty of other material where bits and pieces of a performance has been heard, but most of it is now making its debut. Things like The Who, they're in the movie, but 70% of their performance has never really been heard before, or from a non-bootleg source. And the results, when you hear them mixed properly, are kind of, you know, life-altering in certain cases, certainly with a performance like that. Again, a band at the peak of its powers.
What goes up? And some bands, a lot of people probably don't even realize that they ever played it at Woodstock, like one of the most popular bands of the time, Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Sure. One of the things we had to do during this long period of time that we worked on the audio was in some cases we kind of had to wait for technology to catch up to our needs. And Blood, Sweat, and Tears was a perfect example of that. They were, as anybody who remembers the band will know, their sound was based upon a large horn section. That's kind of what defined them. The recording methods at Woodstock meant that all of the horns in the band, and there were four or five of them, were crammed onto just two tracks of audio on the multi-track recording. And unfortunately, due to atmospheric conditions and bad onstage monitoring, all four or five of those horns were out of tune in different directions. And that was something we really couldn't do anything about until just the last couple of years, when some breakthroughs in polyphonic tuning allowed us to actually go in and correct each of those horns so that they're actually more or less in tune. And then we could mix the things so that you actually could hear what the band really sounded like. Tremendous. 'Cause you came and you took control.
You touched my very soul. And there are some cases, even in something where you're presenting a document of history, where you do get to take a little bit of artistic license.
I think that's right. I'm very concerned about maintaining the historical accuracy of these recordings. That's one of the very few places where I've taken a little bit of license, simply because this stuff should actually be listenable. It isn't very much fun if you have a gigantic hour-long set that's fundamentally really, really unpleasant, which is what the untuned horns sounded like. So I think in this case, I hope posterity will forgive me. I think this is what the band thought they sounded like, and it's certainly how the band would have preferred to sound. We didn't overdub or really fundamentally change anything. We just nudged the tonality of the horns to get them back into a sound range that I think the human ear would prefer to hear. So I think I'll forgive myself that if other people will, and I hope they will.
The Grateful Dead had a very memorable Woodstock, and not necessarily in a good way, right?
They had a legendarily difficult show at Woodstock. There was some chaos in the PA system when they got on stage. They had brought with them a lot of custom gear that was the product of their legendary engineer/chemist, a guy named Owsley Stanley. And Owsley Stanley's equipment didn't mesh well with the regular Woodstock PA system, and so trying to get everything kind of meshed together and working did exactly the opposite. So everything blew up on stage about 4 minutes into the Dead's performance.
You want it louder?
and they were then forced to stand around on stage chatting amongst themselves for about 12 minutes until everything could be sort of restored. And then the set that they went on to play was a little bit sort of measured. I don't think they were having a very good time, and it's not what you would call an A-list Grateful Dead set from 1969.
It's a sinister plot.
From Jerry Garcia's perspective, the fact you had to stand around on stage chatting, that must have been mortifying. But all the rest of us, 50 years later, it's actually really entertaining to hear those guys standing around on stage chatting.
The real Woodstock lasted 3 days, and it takes almost that long to listen to all of the music and everything else that that was involved with Woodstock, now that you've brought it all together.
It's 38 discs, and it's about 36 hours. There are some smaller versions of it that are available. There's a somewhat more digestible 10 CD set, which only has 13 hours of audio, which is a little bit easier to wrap your ears around. It's certainly as close as you're likely to get without a time machine, which no one has invented yet. So, yeah, no, I've designed this to be as immersive as possible. There's all of the ambient noise and stage announcements and a lot of things that really set the scene. So hearing this stuff, you can play this thing straight through in chronological order, and you can really feel just absolutely immersed in sound. I hope some people will do that. That said, if all you want to do is just go directly to Sly and the Family Stone and be blown away by the greatness of their performance, you can totally do that too, and I'm not going to judge you. It was built for now, but it was also built for posterity. If they were curious in 100 years, assuming anybody's curious in 100 years, now at least there's a kind of a factual record of what really happened at Woodstock.
Neil Augenstein, Dublin, GLP News.